This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The humanitarian conditions there are already at its limit. So when you have an outbreak like cholera or measles, it's literally the last straws that bring it to the breaking point.
That's Dr. Nitya Udairaj of Doctors Without Borders on concerns about a six-month-old cholera outbreak in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp. Details coming up. Also, police fired tear gas during a volatile protest near the home of Senegalese main opposition leader. And former Malawi President Bakil Muluzi has been acquitted in a case accusing him of misusing $12 million in public funds. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. A UN special rapporteur has voiced concern about the deteriorating situation in Zimbabwe, where a number of human rights defenders and opposition activists are facing charges, with some in jail. The call comes as the country prepares for elections in August and as the nation waits for President Emmerson Mnangagwa to announce a date for the polls. Columbus Mavunga has this report from Harare.
In an interview from her base in Geneva by WhatsApp, Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights Defenders, Mary Lole, says the number of human rights activists facing charges ahead of Zimbabwe's elections is concerning.
I'm very concerned about ongoing legal proceedings against human rights defenders because they are people who are peacefully working for the rights of others. It is legitimate, credible work. There should be no criminalization, no arrest, no torture of human rights defenders. And that includes freedom of expression, freedom of association, and working for those who are marginalized.
Lole says the Zimbabwean government should drop the charges and release those who have been jailed. Obet Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, which fights for rights of educators that work in rural areas. He is facing charges of inciting public violence, obstructing justice, subversion, and murder, but has been released on bail. He says that despite the charges, he will not budge.
It is not proper for Emmerson Mnangagwa to continue persecuting people through prosecution. The ongoing lawfare against citizens who are viewed as enemies of Mnangagwa should stop now. Zimbabwe is not Mnangagwa's tuck shop. Mnangagwa should learn to respect our fundamental rights as defined in the Constitution. The charges I face today, four of them, they all violate my basic rights. They violate my freedom of expression, the one on posting on Twitter. They violate my freedom to petition duty bearers. They are all ridiculous charges that are meant to silence us, and we demand an end to this persecution and full observance of the people's rights as defined in our Bill of Rights.
He called for the release of jailed opposition activists such as Job Scala and Jacob Garufume before the general election, a date for which has not been set by President Mnangagwa. In a response for request for an interview from VOA, Nick Mangwana, Zimbabwe's Information Ministry Secretary, said, as government, we do not interfere with the criminal justice system. Lole also wants the elections to be peaceful.
The vote must be free and fair, and the election observers should be allowed to do their work without any kind of stopping them in any way. Also, the election process should be completely transparent from start to finish.
Zimbabwe's past elections have been marred by violence and accusations of a lack of transparency. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Nearly 200,000 Zimbabwe exemption permit holders worry they will have to leave South Africa if they cannot obtain alternative permission within a month or a court approves challenges to the government's policy. Last month, the Pretoria High Court reserved judgment after hearing various organizations argue against the new policy. Leaders of political parties and non-governmental organizations representing Zimbabweans in South Africa have expressed concern that there is no word on when the court will rule. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Leaders of Zimbabwean organizations in South Africa have described the Zimbabwe exemption permit holders as panicky, anxious, confused, and extremely worried. Trustee Ndlovu is the South Africa chairman of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, Citizens Coalition for Change. He told VOA that the uncertainty is worse than physical torture.
The delaying of this judgment, actually, it makes it difficult for planning purposes. It makes it difficult for people to know or predict their future. Where would it be?
Victress Matutu leads the Zim Imbogodo, a women's rights organization. She told VOA that after the court case, many people stopped applying for other permits, hoping the decision to terminate the permits would be set aside.
It's very difficult. We just wish that the court release the judgment as soon as possible so that the ZEP holders will know what to do, what the future holds for them in South Africa in terms of payments and stuff.
Ngabuto Mabena, Secretary General of the Zimbabwe Communist Party, says these Zimbabweans already are suffering irreparable harm at the workplace and other spheres of their lives.
What we have noted is that the banks are writing to holders of ZEP to produce their payments, informing them that if they do not do so, they are going to freeze their accounts.
The Department of Home Affairs and Helen Suzman Foundation, which challenged the decision in court, did not respond to questions sent asking for their comments on the matter. The move to force out the ZEP holders comes amid high unemployment and other economic challenges that have led to calls that the jobs they hold should go to citizens. Reporting for VOA News in Johannesburg, I am Tuso Kumalo.
In Dakar, Senegal, police fired tear gas and demonstrators burned cars and ransacked businesses yesterday near the home of the main opposition leader. Tensions are high in the capital as a verdict in Ousmane Sonko's rape trial is expected on Thursday. If convicted, he could be sentenced to 10 years in prison and be barred from running in the 2024 presidential elections. Reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the protests came at a time when no one expected them.
It started in the evening and it went up to dawn, and it was so violent because so many houses were set ablaze, including the house of the former sport minister, and so many businesses were completely vandalized. But also towards dawn, we got reports that, you know, some other houses of the members of the opposition were also attacked in the interior of the country, like in the region of Kes. That was confirmed this morning.
Who's setting the houses on fire and causing the destruction?
These are protesters who are not happy with the way the main opposition leader is being treated, Mr. Ousmane Sonko, who is completely barricaded in his house. As you know that, last week during his trial, that rape trial, he was not in Dakar, he was in Jigamsho. So when he was coming, he wanted to organize a caravan to come back to Dakar, but he was intercepted by this special intervention force. He was brought back to his residence in Sitekir Gorgi, in downtown Dakar, and then he's completely barricaded.
And these are angry supporters of his, Mr. Sonko's, right?
Yes, these are angry supporters of Mr. Sonko. But, you know, anytime there's, violent protests like this, we also have some infiltrators, because people are saying that, the police issued the Ministry of the Interior this afternoon, you know, issued a statement saying that some people were arrested with firearms, including the one bodyguard of Mr. Sonko and somebody who is very close to him.
What's going on there today?
As I am speaking to you, I am very close to Mr. Sonko's residence here in Sitekir Gorgi. The whole area is barricaded by police. Everybody, even if you walk here or you live here, you have to give a very strong, you know, explanation before you are let to go on your normal businesses.
That's reporter Alpha Jalo speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Sonko is accused of raping a worker at a massage parlor, which he denies. His supporters say the charges are intended to keep him from running in the presidential election next year against the incumbent Macky Sall. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Medical care providers in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp say an ongoing cholera outbreak is a looming catastrophe. Doctors Without Borders has described the six-month-long cholera outbreak as the worst yet amid an influx of refugees from Somalia. Victoria Munga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Médecins Sans Frontières, popularly known as Doctors Without Borders, told a news conference Tuesday that a cholera outbreak in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camp is approaching an epidemic and that urgent attention in the areas of water and sanitation is needed. Dr. Nitya Uderaj is the medical coordinator.
The humanitarian conditions there are already at its limit. So when you have an outbreak like cholera or measles, it's literally the last straws that bring it to the breaking point. Which is why today we want to bring focus that the humanitarian situation is already precarious. We would like to bring attention that after 6 months, if the outbreak still continues, it's not normal.
The cholera outbreak hit East Africa's largest refugee camp last November. At least 5 people have died since then. The Dadaab complex in Kenya's northeastern region is home to over 300,000 refugees, most from neighboring Somalia. Their numbers have exceeded capacity due to the extended drought in Somalia. At least 67,000 more refugees arrived in the camp last year, according to national data, putting pressure on already limited resources. Doctors Without Borders country director Hassan Mayaki explains.
Today, according to humanitarian organizations working in the camp, almost half the camp population have no access to functional latrine, leading to open defection in and around the camp, which raises the risk of disease outbreaks.
Kenya's Ministry of Health carried out cholera vaccinations at the camp, but the doctors say curbing the outbreak remains elusive without sanitation and hygiene intervention. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
The High Court in Malawi has acquitted former President Bakili Muluzi in a case accusing him of misusing $12 million in public funds during his administration from 1994 to 2004. The court said the withdrawal of the case yesterday follows a decision by the Director of Public Prosecutions to discontinue the case. However, some analysts say the action sets a bad precedent and contradicts the government's stance against corruption involving high-profile politicians. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Muluzi, who is 82 years of age, has been on bail since 2019 after the Anti-Corruption Bureau, ACB, charged him with stealing and depositing into his personal account public money from international donors, including Taiwan, Morocco, and Libya. High Court Judge Violet Chipao said the discontinuity of the case means Muluzi should be allowed to access all his bank accounts frozen over the matter. Muluzi, who was in court when the decision was made, expressed his joy and hugged his supporters. Tamando Chokoto is one of Muluzi's lawyers in the case, which dragged for 14 years. He told reporters the decision was not surprising.
For those that have been following the case, you will recall that when we had cross-examined Victor Banda, the main investigator in the matter, he mentioned the fact that had it been that he had properly investigated all issues, he would have not arrested Dr. Muluzi.
Muluzi denied the charges, saying the case was politically motivated. Former director of the ACB, Renick Matemba, told Eroko Daily in 2020 that the Muluzi case needed a political solution because it is not suitable for prosecution. The ACB lawyer Clement Mwala said Monday that they will go by court's announcement to discontinue the case. However, analysts say the action sets a bad precedent and also contradicts the government's fight against corruption involving high-profile politicians. George Piri is a political analyst and former lecturer at the University of Livingstonia in Malawi.
I have the fears that there are so many corruption cases involving politicians. What are we going to do with the rest of these politicians? Are we going to discontinue their cases? Because my understanding is that since 1994, when we got Matpate democracy, to date, all the leaders that have been presidents of this country, each of them has been found with a corruption case or abuse of resources.
Piri says the director of public prosecutions, Masauko Chankakala, should have come clear on the grounds which have forced him to discontinue the case.
If the case was lacking some substantial evidence or some clues to the ending of the case, I feel for us to have a better grounds, it should have ended in court. The court could have acquitted him.
However, a good governance expert, George Chaima, told a local radio Tuesday that the administration is right to stop the case because it was draining government's resources, considering the time it has taken to reach its conclusion. However, Chankakala says he would explain the reasons for closing the case after briefing parliament on the matter, as the law requires. Lamik Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science, and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves, 909 kilohertz and 1530 kilohertz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580 and 17530 kilohertz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Since the start of the year, at least six rhinos have been poached in Etosha National Park, home of the highest concentration of black rhinos in the world. It is also a hot spot for poachers. Last week, the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism kick-started the annual dehorning campaign with a goal of removing the horns of 600 rhinos in the next 12 months. Vitalio Anguela reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
Increased incidents of poaching, which recently led to several arrests, have prompted Namibian authorities to embark on a mixed approach to deter would-be poachers from targeting black rhinos. The critically endangered species is often targeted for its horns, which hold mystical, ornamental, and medicinal value for consumers in Asian markets. Speaking at the launch of the annual dehorning campaign, the Minister of Environment and Tourism, Pamba Shifeta, said dehorning rhino brings down their value and deters poachers from targeting them.
We want to dehorn most of them so that they can be safer. And also because sometimes they kill each other, because most of the fatalities happening, natural fatalities happening among the, especially black rhinos, they are very vicious because of fight.
Recently appointed to the Blue Rhino Task Force, a group comprised of military, police, wardens, and intelligence officials, Namibia Regional Police Commander Nafta Lungameni Sakaria told VOA that despite policing efforts, poachers remain a threat to the country's conservation efforts.
The Etosha National Park is the park that has got more black rhino population in the world. So you can understand that this park is very important for the country. People come from everywhere as tourists. They are attracted by the idea that the opportunities are high, that they will see a rhino. And they will. So it's important. It's of a strategic importance to the country.
Dr. Conrad Brain, a veterinarian, said that while dehorning is an effective way to deter poachers, the practice can also have an impact on the survival of rhinos in the wild. Brain said the findings are not insignificant, but the positives of dehorning outweigh the negatives. The dehorning program has been ongoing since 2014. This one is set to take place for the next 12 months, targeting 600 rhinos. The horns are DNA profiled, marked, and stored in the national stockpile. Namibia sits on tons of rhino horns, but the ministry would not disclose the value of the stockpile, citing security concerns. Under the Convention of International Trade in Endangered Species, CITES, trade in rhino horns is banned worldwide. Namibia sought to have the ban lifted at the CITES meeting last year in Panama for white rhinos to raise money for conservation efforts, but the request was denied. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
The Mogadishu Book Fair, an annual literary event that was launched in 2015, took place last week after a three-year break because of the pandemic. The fair, meant to promote reading and Somali culture, was held at the National Theater of Somalia. Mohammed Sheikh Noor has more from Mogadishu.
At the beginning of the event, a traditional dance performance was presented for the audience to enjoy. In the National Theatre, home to the traditional folk dancer team, a man dressed in a costume blew fire into the air as book lovers and writers watched. Mohammed Sheikh Ali, a graduate of Ohio State University, is the founder of the Mogadishu Book Fair. Starting in 2015, he has faced numerous challenges to host the event annually. His motivation is to promote reading, Somali culture, and heritage by bringing together literary creativists and young people.
My feelings towards holding this book fair after 3 years, after the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic, with such a large number of attendees, indicates that we have overcome the worry and pain caused by the pandemic that afflicted the country and the entire world.
Among the many international guests at the event is South African author and blogger Lerato Magwethe, who excitedly joined the dancing troupe.
This is such a privilege and an honor for me. I have wanted to come to Mogadishu since 2019. So for me to finally be here and to be here when there's a big cultural celebration is simply a dream come true.
Professor Mohammed Mukhtar is a lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania in the United States and a distinguished researcher of Somali history. He brought his book on the history of Somali people.
It is true that the book I wrote was not written for the purpose of making money, and its publication was encouraged by the youth here, as you can see, and they even sponsored its production. Since I am on its byline, that is why I am here, and I'm grateful for their encouragement.
The Mogadishu Book Fair is a good opportunity for budding authors to showcase their work. Aisha Hassan has written a book about the cordial ties between Turkey and Somalia.
I cannot express in words how happy I am to be able to display here the book that I have been writing for the past 3 years. This is my first time to show my book to the public.
Nasteha Ahmed encourages Somali children to read and write. She teaches them about their culture, poetry, and traditional Somali tales.
And the way the book fair was organized is the best I have seen, including the section for the children.
The founder, Mohammed Sheikh Ali, ignored negative perceptions on his home country to put together a literary event that has blossomed in a country where insurgency had become an obstacle to social and economic development. Mohammed Sheikh Noor for VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Pete Hunley, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.